This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. When was the last time you tried to learn a new skill or try to get good at something you've always been really bad at? It can be incredibly frustrating to try and fail over and over again. Sometimes it's hard to see your own progress along the way. Often, many of us give up and never accomplish that thing we really wanted to do. Our next guest documented that journey for himself to try and understand why it's so hard to master skills, and he shares the lessons he learned along the way from the masters he worked with. Adam Gopnik is an author and staff writer for The New Yorker. His new book is called The Real Work on the Mystery of Mastery. I talked to him earlier today. Adam, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Delighted to be with you.
I want to talk about this concept that comes from the world of magicians, and it's the title of your book. What do we mean by the real work when it comes to mastering something?
So I was out in Las Vegas with my then 13-year-old son, who was obsessed with card magic, and he and his wonderful teacher, a great irascible sleight of hand man named Jamie Ian Swiss, were in Las Vegas, and I trailed them. And if you've never trailed your 13-year-old son to Las Vegas to meet with magicians, you haven't really lived. And late at night, when the magicians were all together talking their beautiful shop talk, they would kind of grumble to each other, mumble to each other. Hey, who's got the real work on that? Who's got the real work on that? Philosopher's illusion. Who's got the real work on that? I didn't know what the term meant. And I listened and studied, learned the way you do when you're entering into a new world. And I realized over time that what magicians mean by the real work is not who has the greatest technical virtuosity with a trick or an illusion, nor who presents it in the most sensational way. No, what they mean is who's got maximal technical virtuosity, but combines it with a kind of empathetic engagement with the audience. They know what the audience is thinking before the audience knows and can play with their expectations. Because as every magician will tell you, you don't do magic with your fingers alone, you do it with your mind. And as soon as I had that concept, understood what the real work was, I knew that it was a transitive idea, one that you could apply to almost any area of creative work, artisanal work, anything that human beings struggle to learn to do.
Now, the tricky bit is getting from here to there, here being, I don't know how that's done, to having that kind of, yep, of mastery through the real work. And you, through a lot of different experiences, tried to break down that concept and figure out how to apply it. Before we get to specifics, like for somebody trying something new, how can they take that concept of real work and try to use it to learn that new thing, whatever it might be?
It's surprisingly simple, almost ridiculously simple. I dove into drawing and boxing, driving, which I had to learn to do in my mid-50s, and dancing and baking. And what they all have in common is that the real work comes when you break an activity or an enterprise, a skill, an art, down into its component steps, which are often not at all obvious. They're very often counterintuitive. And then you take all these stubborn little counterintuitive steps. Dancing itself is a perfect example of it, right? You learn steps. You don't learn how to dance. But over time, those stumbling steps somehow, and this is the extraordinary human part of it, they seem almost to assemble themselves. If you pursue them with enough passionate perseverance, they assemble themselves into the illusion of a seamless whole. And suddenly you're not stumbling, you're dancing. Suddenly you're not stabbing at the paper, you're drawing. Suddenly you're not just looking at the pattern, you're actually sewing a dress. And that's the way it always happens. You break it down, you instill it inside yourself. It's painful, you persevere, and suddenly it happens.
Adam, that reminds me of a quote I liked enough to jot it down. While you were learning boxing and taking dance lessons and finding similarities between the two, here's the quote: if you surrender to allow the simple pattern to imprint itself on your mind, an inordinate gift will blossom. At least that is the promise of mastery. Can you talk about that moment of realization when that simple pattern that didn't even necessarily feel like dancing turned into, hey, I'm dancing here?
Yeah, I put it better there than when I'm speaking. That's why I'm a writer, not a motivational speaker. But yeah, you know, I like to call it the cognitive opiate that we make for ourselves. That as we're persevering, suddenly the moment, sometimes psychologists call it the flow. I like to call it simply happiness, because happiness is always an absorption in something outside ourselves, where we get totally absorbed in something outside ourselves, and suddenly we're not thinking about it anymore, and we realize in retrospect that we were uniquely happy. That moment of the flow, absorption of happiness, just comes on, but it only comes on if you persevere in all the stumbling, awkward steps for long enough. But the great thing is it doesn't have to be that long, because you register improvement. When I was boxing, and you cannot imagine anyone on the planet who was less well-suited to be a boxer than I am.
I give you pretty good competition in that one, I feel like. Not in the boxing itself, but being awkward about it.
You know, if I'm ever actually going to get in the ring, it'll have to be with another 5'5", 66-year-old writer who's been practicing a sedentary occupation. It'll be, you know, the battle of the Jewish intellectuals. But I love the art of boxing, the science of boxing, because it's about choreographing a set number of punches, jab, jab, cross, uppercut, slip, jab, cross. And as you put those together, at first very awkwardly, you do get better. You do get better. And suddenly they start to become this seamless sequence. And at that moment when they do, however awkwardly they might still look to someone who actually is a good boxer, the charge you get inside is so enormous that it buoys you up like nothing else.
Talking to Adam Gopnik about his new book, The Real Work, on the Mystery of Mastery. Adam, I'm going to throw another one of your quotes in here. Earlier in the process, that is something we got to get over, I think, if we're going to learn something. You're writing here about learning to draw and doing it badly, as I would.
Very bad.
Quoting, I was filled with feelings of helplessness and stupidity and impotence that I had not experienced since elementary school. Why was I so unable to do something so painfully simple? Adam, this really spoke to me. I immediately was taken back to foreign language classes where I felt exactly what you describe. How do we get through that to as you say, persevere?
I still struggle with Italian in exactly that way. It drives me nuts.
Like little kids can speak these languages and I can't.
Yes, little Italian kids speak it perfectly and we can't. The answer to that is you know, partly the obvious one. You want a goal, right? I wanted to learn to draw because I'd spent 40 years as an art critic and didn't know how to draw. And that seemed to me kind of marginally shameful. You can make a perfectly reasonable case that you don't have to be a great draftsman to be a good art critic anymore than you have to be able to hit 100-mile-per-hour fastball to be a sports writer. But it helps you if you internalize some of the task that the people who are good at it face every day. But the way you get past those moments of absolutely tearful impotence, you know, feeling the impossibility, is partly having a goal. You want to get it done. But it's also partly because you begin to become fascinated with the little stubborn parts. I was dancing. I learned dancing, you know, formal dancing with my daughter. And just the two of us struggling to get the basic steps of the foxtrot right brought a kind of intimacy between us. We were having a much deeper conversation in dancing badly than we might have had in talking skillfully, as we both can. So it's both sticking to the goal, why you wanted to do it, but it's also loving the process and finding another person, particularly in the process. That's kind of one of the lessons that comes up again and again in the book.
Another theme that goes through the book is the idea of achievement versus accomplishment. Can you compare and contrast what you mean by those?
Yeah, it's a distinction I've been struggling sometimes to explain to people. By achievement, I simply mean all of the things that are imposed in us, and particularly on our kids, from outside, the grade you've got to get, the college you're supposed to get into, the next task you're supposed to do. It's sort of like running a rat maze where you're always turning the corner, getting a shot of sugar water and being sent off to the next thing. We live in an achievement-driven society that forces our kids and ourselves into that kind of achievement. By accomplishment, I mean the things we choose to do most often by ourselves and for ourselves, the things that just fascinate us and that we enclose ourselves in. I'm sure you've had this experience. When I was 12 years old, I locked myself in my bedroom with a $40 guitar and a big book of Beatles songs, and I forced my fingers to form C chord, D chord, G chord, the simplest chords that there are. And it was just weeks of pressing my fingers and watching them bleed. But when I was done, I had a kind of sense of accomplishment that I have never had at any other time in my life. And everything I've done since is built on the pedestal of that sense of accomplishment, because it brings with it a sense of possibility, and at an even deeper level, a sense of self, a sense of who you are and what you're capable of.
I want to talk about how we set expectations if we're trying to master something. I, in the last handful of years, took some swimming lessons. I could kind of swim. I got a little better. I'm never going to be on somebody's swim team. I'm never going to win a medal. But when it hit me like, hey, I'm doing laps here. I've swallowed less than a gallon of water. I'm not having to stop and wheeze for, 20 minutes between each length. That was an accomplishment for me. When we set out to master something, how do we sort of get that concept of what is a winning state? What is an accomplishing state for me?
Yeah, that's exactly it. That was an accomplishment, not an achievement.
Exactly.
You weren't winning a swim race. You weren't going to get a medal.
Nope.
But it was a profound sense of accomplishment. Well, the great thing about it is that our minds and bodies seem kind of geared, sent from the factory, wanting to have that experience. And the other great thing about it is it only gets more rewarding as life goes on. When we're younger, we have to choose something. And one of these accomplishments, we hope, will become a vocation, something that we can do through life. But then as time goes on, the thing that we're good at, in my experience, we're only able to experience as disappointment, because we see the difference between the scale of our ambitions and the scale of our accomplishments. Other people, we hope, will see the scale of our accomplishments.
And Adam, you accomplished so many things in the book. Do you ever set sight on a new accomplishment that you want to tackle?
Absolutely. That's why accomplishment and achievement, a little subtle, right? Remembering, but yes, there are two that are very much on my mind. I'd love to learn to sing. I write music, and I write particularly lyrics and librettos, and I'd like to be able to deliver my own songs with authority. And the other is, you'll be glad to know, speak Italian. I love Italian culture. I love Italian food. I have been to Italy a few times, and I still feel shamefaced because when I order wild strawberries, I get green beans. And I am determined to fix that and keep my kids from laughing next time we're there.
Adam, arrivederci, and thanks for joining us today.
Ah, is that Italian? Arrivederci.
I think so.
Adam Gopnik is a staff writer for New Yorker. He was with us today to share his new book. It's called The Real Work on the Mystery of Mastery.